PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golf legends, and welcome back to another episode of The Original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is a legend in the business. It's Mr. Don Brown from True Temper Project X. He's the VP of Marketing and Innovation there. Don, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Dan. It's really good to be back. Good to be talking to you again.
You know, you were one of my first interviews in the industry a billion years ago. We sat at the PGA show.
I'm not that old.
We sat in your booth. There was a really awesome backdrop of a bunch of steel shafts, kind of like what's behind you now, but a lot more. And I remember you're so kind as I fumbled through my words trying to get a video out. It's just great memories to look back on. But, you know, before we even really get the show started today, I'd love to know. I mean, that was almost 10 years ago. Things have changed a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, even 10 years ago, you know, I was already more than halfway into where I am now. I've been doing this almost coming up on 24 years now for True Temper. But, you know, if you think about that time, we had probably just kind of acquired Project X, like Hazardous wasn't a thing yet. You know, we were kind of probably what you would call tier two, maybe even tier three in the graphite realm, even though we had good products and, you know, some good graphalloy stuff. Some of the early Project X stuff was successful, weren't nearly, you know, there's not a 10,000 pound gorilla in graphite the way there is in steel, but there's, you know, three or four of us, 3,000 pound gorillas kind of fighting for the top. So, and then obviously in the, you know, the year since then, acquiring Acura and Aerotech, now, you know, even being a grip brand, there's been a lot of expansion at True Temper since we first met. So,
yeah, it's been an adventure. And what I like about it is, at least from my perspective as a consumer, there are like stages to my experience with your brand, like trying Hazardous for the first time, not just the black, but the yellow. I fell in love with the original yellow. I lost my mind over it. In fact, I bet you I have numerous colors and versions of it in the house still down in the, what I like to call the Canadan custom shop. But, you know, and then we go into the steels.
Very excited about something coming in 2025 then.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, we need to dig into that. But I wanted to add another component to that. When T1100 came out and you had T800, there's a big collaboration there, entry point into, I think, Epic at the time, which was a huge conversation point. And then more recently, these LS and IO shafts, I've fallen completely and utterly and helplessly in love with LS. So, like, I've really enjoyed my personal stages with the brand. What do you think, there's a real spotlight there over the last, let's say, 5 years that you guys are crazy proud of?
I mean, I think it's maybe a little more than 5 years, but our growth in graphite, like, you know, 10 years ago when we first talked, like I said, we were definitely a tier two, probably graphite company. Our tour numbers weren't all that high. Our placement in both the aftermarket and at stock retail was not very high. We actually, our CEO at the time kind of put us on a decision. He's like, we're going to double this business next year, and then we're going to double it again the following year. Otherwise, we're getting out. There's no point in being in this business. We're not making enough revenue to justify all the effort and everything we're putting in. And so that was something I was tasked with. And we actually called the Project CBAS, the Composite Business Acceleration Strategy. And so from, I think it was a Dumb and Dumber that had CBAS in it, some movie that had Roger Clemens, I believe, playing a character called CBAS. And so it was kind of a play on that. And, you know, now, many 7 years later, we did, in fact, more than double it the first year and more than double it the year after that. We went up about fivefold in a little over a 2 year stretch. And so now we are a power in graphite. When you look at Hazardous and our Denali line, then you fold in Acura, who we acquired, and you look on tour and you look at retail, you look at aftermarket, we are one of the dominant players in all of those categories. And that wasn't the case 10 years ago.
That's a pretty remarkable thing when you think about it, because, you know, I look back to my high school days in playing golf, let's call it around 20 years ago, right? Over 20 years ago at this point, it was like, what is a stock shaft in an iron? And it's, S300, that kind of thing. I'm still obsessed with S200, but that's a story for Scott Coking, not you. So, but like the idea of like that, it is mainline, it is stock. And then if you got fancy with it, you go to like I don't know, rifle or something crazy like that, the Rory shaft. But the idea of always like, well, I'm going to go with what I trust, which is stock. And that was True Temper at the time, X100, S300, that kind of thing. And now I feel like that's sort of happened with drivers where you see a hazardous in there. You're like, oh, this is a good stock shaft. I can really work with this.
Yeah, that's definitely beneficial for us. You know, we have some OEM partners that have just used hazardous black every year. It's in their line. And so kind of like with dynamic golden wedges, there's just got to be a comfort level where if you were a hazardous black guy and you started that way in Gen 1 or with hazardous smoke and you've used that in the following iterations, when you walk into the store and you see a driver with a hazardous black in it, it's kind of like home. You're like, oh, that's hazardous black. I know what it is. I know what it does. I know it works for me. We don't make radical changes to that product. It wasn't a low launch shaft and then became a high launch shaft. And, you know, it's been a very consistent product from Player Profile for going on almost 10 years now. So, that definitely has worked for us. It's funny. We talked with the younger kids who are 18 or 20. You say, oh, I work for True Temper. And they go, what's that? Oh, we make the hazardous shaft. Oh, you work for hazardous. Like hazardous is brand unto itself. And probably for a lot of younger players, more recognizable as a shaft brand than maybe some of our more heritage steel products.
You know, I have this debate a lot with folks who come on the show, and I'm always fascinated by the balance between tech and marketing. And being able to connect those dots. You got to stop bringing that Red Sox cup up, man. It's killing me. for anyone following along, great cup by all means. Yeah. Be you, but looking at that from Red Sox lost me.
Yeah,
made me lose my train of thought, man. It's brutal.
Marketing.
Yeah. Drawing the connection between the actual material you put in there and then something that you can really latch onto as a consumer. And I think Hazard has checked every one of those boxes. I mean, you have the incredible symbol that everyone thinks about now when you see it, you know, what's coming. I know the technology in there was a huge win, but you have to feel like the other side of that as well was just as big of a win to draw people in and maintain that over the years.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, obviously, you know, and I'm one of the rare people that wear both hats. You know, my main focus now is on the marketing stuff, but I still oversee all of the golf shaft R&D here. And for almost the first 20 years of my time here, I was the guy designing the shaft. So I'll tell you right now, we had some shafts through there, you know, the Project X Black, you know, that was a really good golf shaft, had some of the spread toe stuff that you're seeing now on shafts out on tour. Really good shaft, really good profile, would fit a ton of better players, but just, you know, the marketing wasn't there, the marketing budget, you know, we had a little bit of stock placement, a little bit of tour success, but the fact that it didn't have this big marketing success meant that a shaft that was really, really good didn't sell that well, and vice versa. There's product out in the market that the marketing machine behind it is really good, and nobody's using it, or it's not a good product. You don't see tour players using it, but because of some of the marketing buzz, it gets some retail support. So, you can be successful with one or the other, but the really good products are the ones that blend a really good golf shaft design with a really good brand and marketing story.
So I think it's a good opportunity to explore Hazardous a little bit and how it's refined itself over the history that's been quite storied at this point. I assume you've tried different materials. I know you have different like T800, T1100. There's plenty of things that go into it, but there's also those elements that create, you know, you have red or black or yellow that promote different things. And I'm curious about that. How much flexibility do you have there, but also how much of the end user success or interest in that changes the way you adapt to your next lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at something like the Gen 5 Hazardous Blacks, we have on there what we call our optimized carbon. So if you've seen that shaft, you look at it, you'll see that there is a graphite spread toe weave on the outside in the middle of that shaft. It's a really cool material. It's actually a higher modulus spread toe than most of our competitors might be using, which makes it even more stable in that midsection. And so it definitely makes a hazardous shaft that's already stable even more stable, because usually the hazardous golfer is somebody kind of more aggressive tempo, hard swing, looking for all the stability they can get. But the other side of that is, carbon weaves are sexy. People will buy something because it has a carbon weave on it just because of that. I mean, if you go out and walk through a parking lot at the mall and you're going to see a bunch of cars that have either real or fake carbon weave rims, door handles, mirror covers, all that kind of stuff, because carbon weave is looks good. And so that's a perfect example of material that both from a functional standpoint is extremely effective, but also to the people that are just interested in looking cool or looking techy, has that going for it.
Yeah, I actually played with a guy this past weekend who'd played the same Callaway driver for forever, and the stock shaft in that was an LZ. And, you know, that was about one of the most visual technologies you could possibly have, where you had that visual weave on the outside of the shaft. And I was kind of laughing because he got a new driver head, new Paradigm, but he didn't change the shaft. He was so in love with that thing, and he's smoking it, by the way. So if he's listening, congrats to you, buddy. Great choice. But you know, it's so funny to me how recognizable that was, having been around the sort of hype train that existed between golfers and the conversation at the time. And then, you know, looking back at that, it's not just like, oh, hey, that's a Project X. Oh, hey, that's LZ. I remember that. That was a lot of fun. So
LZ was right around the time I think we did our first ever handcrafted experience, when we had guys from Hackers Paradise come out and got to make their own shafts, because I think the test shafts and the shafts we did at that first one were LZ shafts. So
and you get to hide a little bit of that tech and let them know that, like, hey, we're gonna roll these, we're gonna have some fun, but you're gonna go home and find a really cool connection between what you need as a golfer and what's applied into the shaft. So that kind of stuff's probably pretty exciting for you. And I want to tee you off on something else. How much of that do you do right now? Like, you go and create a shaft and manipulate it in certain ways and then go see what exactly happens.
Yeah. So we can do a lot of that on, we've got a robot, out in our, it's in a test facility close to our Memphis headquarters. And so Scott Coking, who's our steel shaft, head of steel shaft engineering, also runs that test site. So he can go out and this robot's can be adjusted to swing like a 25 handicap with a 70 mile an hour driver swing speed all the way up to tour professionals. So it's really cool because we can go out and test technology targeted towards different golfers. So we have a new technology we're working on right now that hopefully will come out maybe later next year. We're pretty excited about it, but okay, how does this technology work in a product like Denali Black, which is for a better player, you know, faster swing speed, looking for spin control? And does that same technology work in a product like Denali Red, which is lighter weight, slower swing speed, looking for more carry, looking for higher launch? And we can actually see, okay, does this technology actually work for both player profiles, or is this a tour player profile technology, or is this a game improvement technology that doesn't necessarily translate, or is, you know, non-beneficial to the tour player? So that's some of the stuff that we're able to do with having our robot. That's pretty exciting. And then obviously with all the advancements in launch monitors now, and the prevalence is, we can send driver shafts to a dozen different better players we know and have them go hit them, and they're all somewhere where they have access to a launch monitor, and they can send us the data, so we can kind of outsource our testing and not have to do it all of it ourselves.
It makes me wonder, you know, I'd love to go deeper into Hazardous versus Denali, because I think those are two pretty big storylines right now. But before we do, and I know this is going to be a crazy loaded question, you guys have released a similar named product with a different material in it in the past, made it pretty clear, in my opinion, that there were two different materials that existed in it. And you did it purely because the tour tier material that you were utilizing for this, like, really well-known product was really hard for a lot of golfers to swing. You couldn't activate it. You needed something a little bit more, I guess the right word is softer, or you know, something you can load a little bit easier to be a mainline product.
Yeah.
So when you're creating these new shafts, how much of that is like, well, we can go all in on this material here and we're only really considering it this particular segment, versus, well, we also have this material here and this style works for both, but do you kind of get an idea where I'm going? Like, I mean, do you have to focus hard?
T1100, that shaft was counterbalanced. Well, we wanted it to be counterbalanced, and we wanted it to be the stiffest golf shaft we've ever made. But the problem is, when you counterbalance something, you have to take material out of the tip section. And then if you want it to be very stiff, you end up with a shaft that's very brittle, because it's got a thin wall and the high modulus materials are very brittle. So that very much calls for then a material like T1100, which is stiff but also strong. So it gets a lot of confusion out there. My competing shaft companies do this. It's my number one pet peeve, where they'll be like, our 125 MSI fiber is the highest strength fiber available. No, it's not. 125 is how MSI is how stiff the fiber is. It's in fact not strong at all. It is extremely brittle. And so that material, when they talk about using it, they have to pair it with stronger materials to keep, make sure the shaft stay in one piece. So with what T1100 does, it's high modulus, but it's not crazy high modulus. It's not 125 MSI or anything like that. It's in the range of those kind of materials usually run in the 40 to 50 MSI, but they're also triple the tensile strength of those super high modulus materials. So we specifically need T1100 to make a super stiff counterbalance shaft that would stay in one piece. Now, then if you're talking about, yes, we could use that same material in a shaft that's not counterbalanced and not super stiff, but then we're just, it's kind of a waste of that material, to be honest with you. It's not an efficient use of material because you're not using it for what it's intended for. So.
Interesting. So, do you think it's reasonable to utilize different materials within the same shaft lineup that function for different needs? So if someone needs low launch, low spin versus high launch, high spin, is it reasonable to see two shafts in the same line have that same storyline?
Yeah, I mean, or you have to basically if you want to. I mean, the great example would be torque. If you're making a line of shafts and, you know, they're all mid-launch shafts, but for the TX Flex, you want it to be 2.5 degrees of torque. And for the R Flex, you want it to be 3.8 degrees of torque because a 2.5 degree torque of shaft and a R Flex player, when they smash it off the heel, is going to feel like garbage. And, or, you know, there's reasons why we change the torque. But the way to do that is you just change the fiber that's in the torsional plies. So for that TX part, you might be using something that's like a 60 ton fiber. And then when you get down to making the regular flex, you might be using a 30 ton fiber or even a 24 ton fiber for that. And it doesn't make it a bad golf shaft. It means we have chosen from our library of materials to optimize the golf shaft for that specific swing characteristic.
See, that I think is a really undertold story, because I assume you're attempting to maintain that shaft logic throughout, but you're using different materials to activate it in different ways from different speeds, right? Yeah. And is the intent there that a golfer is going to swing at a certain speed to activate, let's say the stiffest form, and then counter to that, the golfer is going to swing it with a much slower swing speed, is going to require that to end up with a similar kind of result with this shaft structure to allow it to be in the same family. Is that what the goal is?
Yeah, I mean, if we weren't changing materials in the shaft to alter flex, tip stiffness, torque, all that stuff, we would just make one shaft. We would just make hazardous black, and it wouldn't have a flex on there, and it would just have the weight. And it'd be like, okay, here you go, you know, 21-year-old college kid with a 190 mile an hour ball speed, and here you go, 75-year-old guy with a 75 mile an hour ball speed. And you and I both know that's not a real good option. So
right. The
way to do that is to change the materials. And yes, it generally means that the way carbon fiber is made, stiffer costs more. The way you make something carbon fiber stiffer is you heat it at higher temperatures for longer. Everybody knows we're coming into winter. Well, not here in San Diego, but some of you other people are coming into winter, and you're going to have to turn on your gas heaters. And you know, the more gas you use, the higher your gas bill is. And so same thing with carbon fiber. Those are gas powered furnaces or electric powered furnaces. And the longer and higher you have to run them, the more costly the product coming out of them is. So yes, T1100 is more expensive than some of its counterpart materials, but it doesn't mean those counterpart materials aren't the right material to make the right shaft for that golfer.
Well, let me ask a leading question here, since we're dancing around the insanity that is shaft design. We've seen tons of changes in the hazardous lineup. We've seen blue, we've seen yellow, Hulk green, and, you know, all these different colors. What makes those next steps become executable, and what maintains black throughout the lineup? Do you know what I mean? So like, we lost yellow for a while, I think it, and then we saw blue, and there's some similarities to it, but please.
Yeah. So, I mean, black has been the same pretty much all along. That's been our low launch, low spin. It's not the telephone pole that the green products are. And the green has been consistent, be it there was the original T1100, which had the green in it. Then there was Hulk, and then there was Smoke RDX green, and now we have the new T1100, which also has the green in it. So that's been consistently been, that is the ultimate spin killer, crazy high ball speed, you know, only suited for that upper 5% of swing speed and launch conditions. the yellow and blue are really the same family. That was a cosmetic decision with a partner of ours that thought yellow really wasn't going to go with the product they were using, asked if we would make it blue, and we did. So, I mean, those two products are really, those exist in the same family. They have a soft midsection. They're counterbalance products. They're very much from the same family. Red came about because just when we had the original Hazardous Black, there were tour players that thought it was too stiff, needed something to launch and spin a little bit more, something easier to turn over. And so that's where the kind of the iterations of the red have come from.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of THPers out there listening and golf hacks. They need to hear that more. The tour asked for the red. It's not an anti-tour shaft. So
no, yeah, it was literally that. And the time, I think it was M2 was one of the more popular driver heads, and the tour players had a really hard time turning that thing over.
Yeah.
So there was a demand, you know, those guys have a decent proportion of the number of drivers on tour at the time. And so, you know, for us to just be like, no, you don't need softer because you're a tour player would have kept us out of a lot of those bags. So, and then a lot of the guys, you see that in fairway woods, and regardless if it's us or some of our competitors, you'll see guys that have the low spin model in their driver and then have the mid spin model in their fairway woods because they want something that launches and spins a little bit with their fairway wood because they want it to mostly, you know, when we're talking about tour, these guys are all getting home in two, and so they want their three wood to land and stop, or their five wood, or now their seven iron to land and stop on a second shot on a par five. But yes, most of those guys were looking for more launch and spin and easier to turn over with a fairway wood.
So I feel like drivers have gone into a very interesting evolution, have gone way low spin and kind of came back with a little bit. Now it seems to be that a lot of the drivers that are being released have numerous options to accommodate either high or low or mid spin and launch as well. It seems to be a really constant evolution in trying to solve what golfers really desire. How much does that impact you guys from a shaft design perspective, especially when you're trying to continue a lineup?
Yeah, I mean, obviously on the driver side, frequently we are, depending on the product, but a lot of times if we're working with an OEM partner, they'll know before they even approach us, like, hey, this head, we need to knock a little bit of spin off. We need to add a bit of spin to it. So we'll, if we're working with them on a specific shaft, we can do that. But you know, black's going to be low spin all the time. And now maybe that you get to a golfer that doesn't want low spin anymore, and that's where we have to have other options for them. The one place where we've really actually seen that become more of a design thing for us is in iron shafts, because everybody's chasing low spin because they want to hit their driver as far as possible. And a lot of times they're doing that not only with the driver head, but also with the golf ball. And then they start landing their seven iron with 4,000 RPM of spin and 30 degree descent angle, and they can't hold a green to save their lives. And that's where a product like DG Mid comes in, where we're trying to give even better players who have just in chasing distance have lost descent angle and spin rate, and they need help getting the ball up more in the air with their irons because they've made a golf ball decision to maximize their driving distance.
I'm just going to keep pressing since we're learning a lot today, Don. Denali, it's been a pretty big conversation point. We saw a lot of THPers out there last year giving it a try and really enjoying it. What is the major differentiator between Denali and your lineup?
I mean, Denali versus Hazardous is very much the aggressive tempo type of player. Denali's got a straight taper midsection designed to be not only easier to load, but also feel easier to load. You know, some golfers don't like to feel the golf shaft bend at all during their swing. That's the Hazardous Black guys, but there are guys that like to feel the shaft load and unload. There's also a trend we'd seen kind of on tour. There's a very, very popular shaft out there that, to all credit to them, is dominating the most of the tours right now in terms of their percentages. And the black version of that shaft in an X is softer than a Hazardous Black S. So we saw this thing where for years, the space race had been got to be really stiff and really low torque. And then all of a sudden there was kind of this turn to, there were better players, tour players that wanted more feel. They wanted something that they could load a little bit easier, was a little bit softer in the handle. And so that's kind of where our Denali testing started was against a few of these products that were still low torque and still even low spin, but softer handled product. And so that's where the Denali testing started. In fact, we went out and did a test. It was with Denali Blue, the original prototypes, versus two of the most popular shafts on tour that have that kind of profile. Painted the shafts black, just put A, B, and C on them. Didn't tell our tour reps what they were and just said, come back and tell us which one, A, B, or C won. You're not going to know what that means. You just have to tell us. We want it to be a truly blind test for all of you guys. And Denali won 75% of those tests completely blind. So we knew we were onto something there with the players who preferred that kind of profile. And so that was with the blue. And then we've obviously extended the line to black. And then now with the red, you know, which is a lot lighter, kind of higher launching game improvement, super game improvement type part.
Wow. So one of the things we did last year, and Mr. Koking joined us at Dormy Club. Maybe it was last year. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Man, I don't even know it. I don't know what month it is. I don't know what day it is. I think it was last year. Yeah. We did the blind test on THPers, and what ended up happening is they got to take it home with them, not having a clue what it was. And then eventually they got to find it out and got a really cool shaft out of it. So, you know, it makes me wonder if you took, let's say, a shaft like Hazardous to a range and painted X on their S, do you think it would have the same or different level of success? Do you feel like the golfers need that ego of X to play it?
There are some. I mean, we certainly, there's a couple. One great story is, so this is probably, maybe you were playing golf back then, but the Graphaloid Blue was one of the first golf shafts I ever designed and still kind of has this cult classic. You'll see people scouring eBay and, oh, where can I get a Graphaloid Blue? I can't find them anymore. Hint, there might be a limited release coming soon on that. So pay attention, those of you Graphaloid Blue cult fanatics. But that shaft was at the time really stiff. And there were tour players that even in the S thought it was too stiff, couldn't use it. So we took Graphaloid Blue R-Flexes and put S on them with a little dot, like a period at the end of a sentence behind the S. So we knew, our tour reps knew, that that was really the Graphaloid Blue R just in the S. And we called it the S dot, Graphaloid Blue S dot. And even our part number was Graphaloid Blue S with a period behind it and then dash length, which is our part number format. We had several tour players playing an R-Flex shaft and loving it, and they would never have played that in their lifetimes if it said R on there. There's no tour player that's walking up to the first tee with a shaft that says R, and then we certainly see it in the aftermarket. If you look at our Acra product line, like our I-Series, some of our best-selling stuff, there's no flex on those irons. It just says 40, 50, 60, 70, because that way the fitter can fit the golfer without the golfer being hung up on, oh, I'm a regular flex guy, or I play stiff, or I can't play that flex, whatever it is, they actually get a better fitting experience because they don't have to get hung up on what the flex says on the shaft.
Yeah, I think one of the things I've always appreciated about Project X is it's a 6.0, 5.5. There's not X or S or R. Because you already mentioned this, not only is a shaft from a different lineup completely different, S to S or X to X, like I would assume there are a number of shafts that exist in current lines where the S doesn't necessarily match the S. What's your take on all that? Do you think it's reasonable to benchmark? Is it reasonable to say I'm a stiff guy or I'm an X guy?
Yeah, I mean, I would think if you were a Hazardous Black 6.0 guy in the Smoke Black RDX, it's probably safe to assume you're a 6.0 and the Gen 4 and the Gen 5. If you say I was a Hazardous Black 6.0 and now I'm trying Denali Blue, you might not be a 6.0 guy, because we're all those numbers, you know, the R frequency numbers 6.0 used to mean something, and R, S, and X back in the early days meant something. You could now take a stiff flex or a 6.0 from us, Fuji, UST, MRC, Acro, whoever you want. You could take those all and measure them, and you'd probably get a fairly surprisingly wide range of frequencies on those. And that's just because, you know, what a stiff is for a certain player profile. Like if you're making a super game improvement 50 gram shaft versus a tour level ultra low torque low spin shaft, stiff in those two things means two different things to that consumer. And so you're not going to make them the same frequency, because then you're one of those consumers is not going to be happy. So we still have to put RS and X on things, or 556065, but the meaning of, there's no standardized meaning of that within one company, and certainly not across the golf shaft industry. So
do you find a challenge in that? Do you think it would be better if they did enforce some sort of way to normalize that from everyone?
No, because I think you'd end up with that exactly the scenario we just talked about, a 70 gram S and a 40 gram S. You don't want those to be the same frequency. They don't have any, because they're, you know, different shafts for different golfers. So, and you never, ever get that done.
Right. Well, you know, it's a big ask, but you know, we hear a lot of these things about values being different company to company. It mentions of like, how is torque rated in every company? The most simplest one I've ever heard is like, how do you measure the length of a club? And there's like, there's no real balance there. So
if you go on our tour truck, cause we have to, you know, we're kind of Switzerland. We build everybody's clubs on our truck. Players come in. We have a chart that shows length, obviously, is different from almost every truck. So it's like, if it measures 38 on our truck, that's 38 and an eighth on this truck, 37 and a quarter on, I mean, it's lie angle's different, swing weight is different. So those are three properties that are what most people consider universally constant. Like, how long is a yard? We know how long's 45 inches. Oh, I know how long 45 inches. All right, show me how long a 45 inch driver is. Oh, no, it depends on what ruler we use. And is it left-handed or right-handed, or is that grip or no grip, cut, uncut? So yes, even on the simple things like length, we can't all agree. So I think coping for us to agree on, you know, what frequency a stiff flex should be is probably a hope that should be left alone.
Yeah, I don't mind that it's not clear. I just wish it would be stated more and people would understand. And I don't think that's the ownership of the shaft companies to solve that. But yeah. I think the more educated we become, we've been pretty obsessed with launch monitors for the last few years. But do we pay enough attention to what a stiff shaft means at this company versus this lineup? Yeah. Like we need to become more educated. I don't think it's on, you know, a centralized logic board, but certainly an understanding.
You've seen, you know, we did it. This is way back in the Graphaloid days. We had a TPR rating, true performance rating, where we put, it was like three numbers, and it was like butt stiffness, tip stiffness, weight, or maybe torque was one of those. There's been a couple other companies out there have tried to introduce kind of a universal code, like, oh, this is a 4692. It's great for that company, and if you know that one company shafts really well, you can understand what that means. But if that company has a universal shaft code and four other ones don't, it doesn't work. So, and again, I think, you know, I would say obviously for the golfers that are that in tune to it, go get fit, because the guys that do know how those shafts work are the guys that are doing fittings, because most of the big stores now are either creating their own databases of how shafts compare to one another, or there's a lot of commercially available things out there where they're able to go compare shafts from different companies to get an idea of how one company's stiff compares to another company's.
It sounds like Kusala White X is my guess on that one. 4692.
I don't know if that's what the number was, but it was that company that had tried to do the universal design code. And there's a new player out there that again is trying to do the same kind of thing. And you know, it's great if people get really into your one shaft line and understand that within that one shaft company, but obviously, you know, they're not going to tell us even how they came up with that code. And even if they did, we wouldn't be putting it on our shafts. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, what about looking at the future a little bit? Does Denali change? Does hazardous change? Does material change? What are you willing to admit to?
Yeah. I mean, obviously Denali has been hugely successful for us. If you go out and look, both in product that's out now and some product that's going to come out in January. Like if you were to go to the PGA show, pardon the pun, you're going to see an avalanche of Denalis. It's going to be in everybody's product line. So I don't have any additional details to share, but you'd have to be a pretty terrible at your job as a salesperson or marketing person to have something with that kind of universal success and then not follow up with the sequel. The Avengers didn't stop after Captain America, the first Avenger. They made a few more after that. So kind of similar thinking on that one. Hazardous, obviously, you know, that product Gen 5 stuff is relatively new. Black and the T1100 are out now. probably see one more from there, Dan, that you'll be pretty excited about. And then we'll continue to evaluate, you know, at some point in time, you know, all the really popular shaft brands eventually kind of fade away, because at some point in time, it's like, all right, I really liked Hazzard's through the first five or six versions of it, but now I want to try something else. I haven't used it in a long time. So still kind of TBD on, I'd be honest with you, we thought about Hazzard's might kind of go away after the fourth generation, and there was so much industry demand and consumer demand for Gen 5 that kind of changed our minds. So we'll see. We'll see what the next 18 months or so brings on that front.
How is the inclusion of Akerbin for not only collaboration, but also helping to encompass all shaft desires that people would have?
You know, Acra's, it's a really good brand. It's something they're able to do, something that that we don't do, is, you know, we, being as big as we are with our stock programs, we usually think of, all right, what's our minimum order quantity? Okay, we're going to make 5,000 or 10,000 or even 2,000. And Acra, the breadth of their lineup is, hey, we've got an 85 gram R-Flex fairy wood. You know, how many of those are you going to sell in a year? Well, like four. But if you're a fitter, you need to have the entire breadth of product on the wall, where you have, okay, I'm going to carry, say, the GX line, and I'm going to sell 90% of my volume is going to come from six SKUs. But when that one really odd guy comes in that needs an 85 gram R-Flex fairy wood shaft, I need to have a product for him. And so that's one of the things the Acroline does really well. It's got this huge depth of product that covers every possible corner of your fitting matrix. From, you know, they've got some 40 gram stuff with the new Shogun. The FX or GX stuff, sorry, goes up to 100. The TZ stuff goes up to 100 gram, you know, M5 plus, M6. So they really cover every corner. And what's been good, you know, as part of a collaboration now, is before, when they were doing both shaft design and graphic design, it was a lot of back and forth with their factory. Okay, make us this prototype with this graphic, and then be, okay, great, you'll get it in 4 to 6 weeks. And now they can call us and be like, hey, we want to try this prototype with this graphic. Okay, you'll get it in 2 weeks. So it's really them having access to our R&D facilities and group, and just turnaround time has really made it so we can do things a lot faster with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great collaboration and or incorporation into the story. One of the things I think is interesting is Handcrafted has that really finite feel to it, not necessarily sitting in a fitting cart, but also allowing you guys to get more localized with some cool stuff that you release, and doesn't feel as, you know, mainstream. Yeah. As some of the other stuff. And I know it went away for a little bit and now it's back. Where's Handcrafted going? And it's great to see it, first of all.
Yeah, you know, Handcrafted was a little bit of a victim of its own success. It just started out as we were taking prototypes out to tour with that logo on it, kind of a cool little thing. Then we started making tour players really resonated with it. We started making Hazzard's Blacks that way. We started making hats and t-shirts, and we were having, there were tour players, you know, we're sitting in a whatever restaurant at whatever PGA tour stop, and you see a tour player come in wearing a Handcrafted hat, and you see caddies wearing them during the tournament rounds, and you're all of a sudden you're like, man, this, you know, the brand has become maybe even bigger than the actual product itself. And but then we got all this demand for it, and then, you know, when we were at the peak, we had probably 50 different SKUs we were doing as Handcrafted, and it included kind of like what Acro does. It was like, we got Evenflow Red 40 gram A-Flex. All right, we need the Handcrafted version of it. You know, we need to make those Handcrafted. We had all these different SKUs. Well, the problem was, is you're, okay, we need to make four of these and then seven of those and then 10 of these. So it was really hard to try to manage those, you know, small orders and that big a number of SKUs. And then it got so popular that our lead times were growing out to 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks. So you can imagine, if you're a golfer and you go in and get fit for a Handcrafted black 60 gram 6.0, and you're pumped for your driver that you're going to pay $1,000, $1,200 for when you roll in fitting fee and upcharge fees and shaft fees and all that stuff. And then they go, we'll get it to you in 3 months. Well, if you're a golfer and, you know, somewhere in the north or northeast, and it's, you get fit in April, you're like, oh, sweet. So I get it for my last 2 months of my year, month of my golfing year. So we had to kind of, we put a halt to it, took some time, thought about how we're going to do it. And so like right now there is just handcrafted T1100 in five SKUs, and that's all we're making right now. And once we've satisfied the demand for that and built up some inventory, we'll look at what products next. And we're going to kind of do it that way, where it's more of a limited edition, limited run, as opposed to trying to be all things to all people all at the same time. Because it just got to where we went from one rolling table doing, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. To the end, we had two rolling teams on two shifts. I think at the end they were working 20 days on, 1 day off for the last probably 3 or 4 months. And it just, not only was it, you know, it's killing the people, killing the customers. It just, yeah, too big for its own success. So we shut it down and we brought it back, and we're excited to have it back. We bought our, you know, our same lead who ran that, who's worked for True Temper for 25 plus years. He started as a teenager in our old factory in East San Diego doing mass production. So he knows more about making golf shafts than probably anybody, but maybe Larry. And so he's running that cell for us. So we're excited to have that going again.
That's awesome. And since you guys weren't busy enough, you decided a couple years ago, I'm assuming, let's see about these this whole end of the grip issue. You're not building clubs yet. You're not building ferrules that I'm aware of. But you said, hey, look, there's a grip at the top of this shaft. Maybe we should start looking at those too.
Yeah, you know, we just kind of looked at the space. You know, as every company is looking for spaces to grow. You know, we're one of the dominant forces in graphite. We are the dominant force in steel. We're looking for growth opportunities. Certainly during COVID, everybody knows grips were hard to come by. And, you know, if we're being frank, we would have loved to have been out with this grip earlier. But the other part of COVID was it took us almost 2 years to get our brand new machines in. So we ordered all brand new machines shipped out of Europe, and just with lead times and shipping times and all that stuff, you know, from when we started to when we actually had machines to start making grips in, ended up being between probably 18 months and 2 years. So it took us a lot longer to get the machines than I actually did once we got them in to get to our final grip. So the grip is called Icon. We're really excited about it. You know, most players on tour, most better players are still playing, you know, a black rubber injection molded grip. We all know that there's, you know, fancy grips out there with different alignment tools, multiple compounds, all these other things. But if you were to go out and look at the Daryl survey for the PGA Tour, the number of black rubber grips is about 80% of that tour every week. And so that's why we started there. And so we had to look at that product. And it's an interesting thing with grips, because it's the only part of the golf club you hold. And so there's a couple models that are really popular. And so it's, how do you make that better but not different? Because if you give somebody a grip and they put it in there and they grab it and they're like, this taper rate is different, the firmness is different, anything feels different at that first waggle, they're going to be turned off and they're going to be like, no, this isn't what I play. So it's, how do you take, you know, the most popular thing out there and make it better but the same, or different but not too different? So with Icon, we've kept the traditional profile, the kind of the traditional firmness of the rubber compounds. What we've done is we've made it put a lot more traction. So we call them perforations, the little holes that are pattern that's all over your grip. We've made that more dense, and we've created a new perforation style that actually helps promote moisture wicking away from your hands, and also just has a lot more bite to it. And then we've increased the amount of those perforations that are actually on the grip up to about 30% versus some of the other popular ones.
So how much of getting into grip was understanding that that is the direct connection to your main product? How much of that is saying, you know, the last thing you want is to someone to buy a grip that sucks and puts it on their your excellent product and then assumes your excellent product is not good because the grip's not good?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some of it that some of that we, you know, we're certainly not an OEM, but when you get into the component side of things, we are, you know, we're one of the biggest, if not the biggest. And so we know a lot about swinging golf clubs, and we're like, hey, there, we know and we're confident that we have some ideas around grips that we can bring that other people aren't. And so it was just about making, this is not a grip we're outsourcing. You know, we didn't take a CAD file and send it over to somebody, Alibaba, and say, hey, make this grip for us. We bought all new machinery. It's in a 60,000 square foot facility we built from the ground up. We hired an engineer who'd been at one of the other big grip companies, a lot of expertise. And we went through probably, if you combine the rubber compounds and then the perforation design, probably 100 plus different prototypes before we landed on what is the final Icon grip.
When you say final icon, is that like the starting point? Will we see lots of iterations?
Icon 58 round that we currently have for sale, but we will have a 60 round here before the end of the year, and then you can expect to see other sizes, versions of icon, you know, as time progresses.
Yeah, since you know you're pretty bored over there, so you're just looking for stuff to do.
Well, I mean, it's funny because you know we took Icon out to tour, and we got some guys on tour to use it right away, but there were a lot of like, oh, well, I play Reminder. Oh, well, I have Chord. And so we have a lot of, I'll air quote, promises or IOUs around once you have Icon Chord, or once you have Icon Reminder, or once you have Icon Chord Reminder, or Icon Midsize, or any of those, all those variants of a black rubber grip, I'm in. So that's, you know, well, you know, you look on TV and you're like, yeah, all those guys are just playing a black rubber grip. Well, if you were to go look at the butt caps and fold the back and see what size it was, or if it had a reminder, you'd start to see that there's a lot of variance on those grips out there.
Mm. Can I ask you a potentially weird question? And if you don't love it, don't go with it.
Nothing less for me, Dan.
Yeah, there it is. When it comes to shafts and now I guess grips, who do you think is more challenging to convince to engage with your product? Do you think it's the OEMs or do you think it's the consumer?
I think it's probably the consumer. Just there's a, you know, there's however many golfers we have messaging each one of them individually. And then depending on who you follow on Instagram or who your fitter's aligned with, or, you know, has allegiance to, that definitely, you know, messaging that has to be overcome. I think grips is a little harder because grips, again, it's the only part of the golf club that people touch. And so it's tactile. So you can get somebody to grab, you know, a grip and make a rejection before they've ever even swung at one time, because they just put their hands on like, yeah, this doesn't feel right. Either the taper's off, or it feels too coarse, or not coarse enough, or too hard, too soft, whatever it is. It's, you know, it's a little bit of the Goldilocks and the three bears with this porridge is too hot or this porridge is too cold, but it's before you've ever even actually tasted it. They just look at it and see the steam and like, oh, too hot. You know, and so same thing with grips, is you can have somebody make a negative decision about your grip before they ever even swing the golf club.
So I've seen people decline using or swinging a grip due to the smell of them, let alone the the touch.
Certainly, depending on what kind of compound or what factory your grip's coming out of, and you know that can certainly be, you pick them up and be like, "Well, these kind of stink. I don't want to." Yeah. Josh's. I can picture Josh being a little bit on the, oh, this grip smells funny.
I don't remember where we were. It might have been at an event or at HQ, and we got these grips and they just reeked of like a compound or a material, whatever it was. And it's just like, why would anyone want to touch these grips? It's crazy. The silly little things you worried about. I have one more question before we wrap up today. And I think it's an interesting trend throughout the industry that we're seeing putter shafts change a lot. Are you in tune with that? Or are you looking to make any shifts in what you guys are doing?
We offer a couple of different graphite putter shafts. So on the Acro side, we have our Sync putter shaft. So it's one of the lowest torque putter shafts out there. It's 1 degree of torque at 100 grams. And then we have an 85 gram version as well. And then we actually have a steel fiber putter shaft, which obviously, you know, if you're making that transition from a steel putter shaft to a graphite putter shaft, the stopover, just like it is in irons between going from steel to graphite, has been steel fiber. So that just made a lot of sense for us. There's obviously some limitations there because right now all those shafts only exist as a straight shaft going into a hosel. You know, if you got to go over a pin, over a spud, or if you got to have a double bend, there's not a lot of options there for you. So then that's something I think, you know, people are probably exploring out there. I'm still, I was messing around with a graphite putter shaft recently, a lighter weight one, and just made the static weight of my putter way too light. I think on the front, this was actually 2 weeks ago, I hit six greens on the front and three putted all six of them. Switched putters at the turn to my old trusty, and first putt I had, I rolled in a 25 footer for birdie. So that putter from the front nine, I brought it back to the office and threw it at the engineer and said, I don't ever want to see this thing again. So,
okay. So Boston Red Sox, I don't have a winter here, but I also three putted six holes. The only thing I'm going to hear out of that is the three putting, for the record. Well, yeah, it's interesting to see that shift, and I know there's some quality product out there from some of your elements, but I was curious overall, like let's say Project X, is there any real interest to shift into that, or is it let's let our other parts of our business handle most of that right now?
I think, you know, having you know, with the Acra Sync, Acra's got an FXP putter line as well, and then we have the steel fiber, you know, I feel like having probably what is 12 to 15 different SKUs of graphite putter shaft, we're probably good. So
yeah, cool.
I mean, we could definitely, and some of that comes to branding, you know, we could take a Sync putter structure and paint it and put a Project X on, and it would still be the same shaft. So, you know, Acra's definitely in steel fiber from an aftermarket kind of traction standpoint are definitely our stronger brands at the higher end fitting studios. So it just makes sense to use those brands on those kind of products.
Awesome. Don, do you have any questions for me or any additional bits of feedback you want to throw out there?
No, I mean, I'm excited to be back on the pod. I think I've been talking with the boss over there, and I think fortunately or unfortunately for you and for your listeners, you're probably going to be hearing a lot more from me next year. So I don't know when we release all those details to the public, but yeah, I think I'll be making some more appearances here in the future. So hopefully we got a lot more good topics to cover. Obviously with four golf shaft brands and a grip brand, there's an endless amount of topics. So,
well, we left a lot of stones unturned, which is great. I think it'd be really fun to have you on and get some listener questions answered. I think that'd be really cool.
That'd be a good way to go. I know I've always had a lot of fun with the THP community. You know, I've met probably now 30 plus members of the community, still interact with some of them from time to time. And I've always, you know, I think the THP community is always very genuine, and I will say maybe more respectful and polite than some of the other golf forums you might find out there. It's much less of a battleground, so it's always fun to interact with people who aren't just trying to pick a fight.
Yeah, you just can't talk about divots, playing out of divots and fairways, and you're safe on THP. It's fine.
I just pro rolling out of the divot.
Yes, there we go. That is Don Brown, VP of Marketing over at True Temper Project X. A great group of companies that is expanding every day, and you're seeing that. Go check out the new grips they've got. Very exciting. I can't wait to see what the next iteration of Hazard is. You know I'm a huge fan, and I am super stuck in these LS shafts, so I love and hate that because it just seems like the absolute for me. So yeah, if you are out there playing golf this weekend, have a great time, folks. Tell someone they're good at it because they probably need to hear it, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.